And just making a logical argument that federal government means the federal government, i.e. legislative, judicial, or executive branch, does the plan. And to have the faith to do the plan, first of all, destroys your counterplan ground, means that you don't have grounds to say that the state should do the planning, and the affirmative should be held responsible for defending federal government action. Right? And secondly, it destroys your dispatch ground too, because it takes away from your ability to run federalism or a point argument.
You should also run de-established, because they're banning.
Right. Supposedly.
They're banning, but you're not necessarily established.
Right. There are also good case arguments in that file against banning compulsory education. The next affirmative is the Obama's affirmative. And this is the affirmative that my lab worked on at WBI. And I think it's a really good affirmative. I do think it is a good affirmative that you need to run this year. The affirmative argument that, first of all, it's based on the realization that Ebonics is a real language, not slang or just a spin-off of English. Ebonics is the language that, well, it's kind of hard to describe. First of all, the word Ebonics comes from two words, ebony, meaning black, and phonics, meaning sound, black sound. And the argument that the case makes is that Ebonics is a real language because, one, it's rooted in culture, and there are really good parts in this file that talks about how the evolution of the language, how when slaves were brought over from Africa, they spoke different languages. They spoke several different languages. And the oppressor or the slave masters, the slave shippers, in order to break down, first of all, their morale, and to make sure that they weren't speaking the language in which they could disguise some plan to escape, they forced them to speak English, and instead, the slaves co-opted English into the language that we now know as Ebonics. The plan argues that academic achievement for African Americans in the classroom is decreasing because African-American children can't understand the teacher, because the teacher makes the assumption that the only right way of teaching is standard English, and that's how they teach. The plan would mandate that teachers working in schools where there is a 25% or more Ebonic-speaking population, that the teachers be trained how to speak Ebonic, and the cultural background that comes along with Ebonics. Now, the biggest misconception about the affirmative is that they're going to teach Ebonics in the classroom. That's not what the affirmative does. The affirmative says that they teach standard English, math, science, social science, all of those subjects by speaking Ebonics. It means that the students in their classroom speaking Ebonics can understand what they're teaching. And the cards are really good about how it increases academic achievement, provides cultural connections for the students, because they're not taught anymore that their language is wrong. And those cards are really good to talk about how you teach children that their language is wrong, it causes self-hatred, because you think that what you learned was wrong and that your culture is a flawed one, which is not true. The language is a beautiful one. Do you negative studies against it? The first one is states and federalism. I know you're surprised. The next one, well, states and federalism and maybe a Clinton story or any politics story is a good dispatch strategy. But I think a more important strategy to this case is maybe running a few critiques. The ones that I suggest are teacher autonomy and Latin critique, so Latino critique. The argument is that you marginalize Latino or Spanish-speaking students in the classroom because they experience the same type of depression, and that the case is only centered towards African Americans. Of course, there are answers to that, but I think it's an argument you made, and there's a case. The next case, I'm going to speed up a little.
My other comment is that I think that if somebody runs a case, when you're on critical, that I go to, which definitely links, that you have an awesome explanation as to why that would return it, and just get some of the explanation that Johnny gave about how you would be empowered in the classroom and the students themselves would be able to feel part of that element and feel that they actually own that home.
Right.
Those questions
turned
out, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. In that packet, in the environment packet, there are several other advantage options, and one of those is critical pedagogy. Now we're going to do that. The next case is the debate case. It argues that we should have mandatory debate classes across the board to increase academic achievement. Everybody's going, yeah, woohoo! Okay, the strategy against it. What do I say in this case about me? State and federal food. No, you do not just get up and walk out and go, you know what, you're right. State and federal food. And Clinton. Or some form of a policy is that. Some form of a policy is that. Everybody with me? Okay, next case. Multiculturalism. The case would argue that currently education only happens through one culture, and you all guess what culture that is. Very good. And that we should change that to encompass, to be all-encompassing, right, to encompass all culture. Strategies against it. State and federalism. And Clinton, sorry. Also, you can also, there are some case terms in the file that talks about how any educational policy will co-opt cultures. And not only that, but there's a bureaucracy provision that I recommend to this funder that talks about how the affirmative will never happen because of the bureaucratic element of implementing the policy, especially a policy centered towards an all-encompassing cultural educational policy. The last case is detracking. Case argues that the tracking system in schools is racist and that it marginalizes students because they get to define what smart is, and that we should take away the tracking system and put the students together. Strategies against it. State federalism and Clinton. Let's start there. To get that. There are some case terms against detracking, and there's like, I think the case pretty much wins to everything. So there are some other case options are fine, and maybe even top counter, that they don't establish the policy. They take away the track system. Now, without further ado, today.
The only case I'm going to talk about is is the high school project, and it was put out at Henry and Vermont, and pretty much the same way. What it does is that it passes this act called the ELSA Act that supposedly allows for additive bilingualism. There's a difference. This is important. Right now, they claim that we have emergent programs, which are like ESL programs. A lot of people are very familiar with those, that put you into a different classroom where you're going to learn English, and then you have to take classes that are all in English. Now, additive programs allow for people that speak another language other than English to also take like math in their language and geography in their language and things like that. Now, the ELSA Act that is passed is only evidence that says that the ELSA Act, well, what the ELSA Act does is that it devolves power to the states to allow them to implement the appropriate bilingualism program, and so you have to prove that the states want to do additive bilingualism. That's the biggest problem with the case, that the evidence that it says California would want to do it is really bad, and that's not necessarily what the other states would want to do. So the policy evidence is the worst part of the case, but I think that the idea of bilingualism education, affirmative, is very good. I just don't think that it was written the right way. I can't. I'm going to give you some authors about policy evidence that I think would allow for better cases. There's this woman named Lucia Elias. What's your name? ELIAS/OLIVARES. Her first name is Lucia, and she writes a lot about language planning. That is the big keyword that you want to type in the library if you want to go write this case. The other person that writes a lot about language planning, especially in New York on Puerto Rican immersion programs. Her name is Lourdes Torres, T-O-R-R-E-S. And the other person who writes so much about Chicano immersion programs in L.A., which has an affirmative sitting there for you, and I could give you all names of the books if you come find me later. Her name is Carmen Silva, S-I-L-V-A, T-O-R-V-A-L-A-N. Now, the biggest place to find these affirmatives is going to be where there are actually immersion programs that is a big deal, like in Miami for the Cubans and the other Hispanics, in New York, of course, Puerto Ricans, and in L.A. for the Chicanos. That's where your examples and your tests, where those at, where you're going to find those at. Now, the other thing that I would say about this is that I think that it could turn critical pedagogy in a really awesome way, just like we're explaining with the Abolish program, talking about how maybe these commercial programs are good. But the debate to really look at is what's going on right now, and you're going to find that not necessarily the additive versus the immersion programs is the big debate. The big debate is going to be found in the bilingual education review, which most of your libraries are going to have. And the language planning review. And I would suggest that if you're running against the state, that you would run the counterplan that the federal government institute additive bilingualism, because therefore you actually solve, because the biggest problem with the case is that you don't really know if states are actually going to implement additive bilingualism. And that's about all that I have to say about that. There's awesome negative cards talking about how there will be a lot of resistance against this, because the people who, the actual people who are affected is supposedly the lower class families, but those are the ones who actually lose their ethnic mother tongue, because it's been studied and proven that the middle classes actually stay bilingual. So that's the biggest part of the case, is that the families who come here who don't have much money don't want necessarily their kids to continue to be proficient in Spanish or whatever. They want their kids to learn English, and they want to throw them into the program. And, and there's a lot of literature that talks about that. That's the only way that they'll really become proficient, and that keeping that dividing line is very bad for the culture. So that's all I was going to say about that. We're apparently running out of time. But if you're interested in this, I could give you much, much more information on where you could find sites and other information.
Yeah, about the vouchers program, could there be like a Medicaid scenario where, like, I heard that, about the vouchers, can something happen like a Medicaid scenario where certain hospitals do not accept Medicaid, which is supposed to be, which is like a medical version?
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you have your certain amount of money, and everywhere has to take it. The question is just then, I mean, and one of the negative arguments is, well, those private schools just increase their prices, and, you know what I mean? So the problem is you have to pay that difference.
I think there's also an argument for why private schools might not take these students, you know what I'm saying? Like, if these students are coming out of urban schools, then their academic achievement grades might be at a lower level than what the private school would normally let in, although there might be an explanation for that. So there is a possibility that private schools will be very adamant about their cutoff point and won't accept the voucher, because you have to get on this. Like, some private schools mean that you have to get in based on your academics. They could logistically refuse to let in minority students who have lower academic achievement into the private school.
And there's no provision, or at least I haven't seen provisions in the actual plan that says anything about changing the academic standards from getting into different private schools. So those academic standards stay the same.
Any other questions?
Yeah.
Any
I just wanted to mention something that I think is a really good argument against any team that says we're going to add something to the curriculum. Now, right now, you have so many hours and so much time, and it's full of stuff now, right? So when they add something, something else has got to be cut. Okay, and this is called curriculum trade-off. That if they add something to the curriculum, something else has got to go. Now, the evidence is pretty good that when things get cut in the curriculum, the first thing that gets cut is art. Art education, art classes of all sorts get cut. And you can make the argument that art education is one of the most important things. Learning about art is one of the most important things you learn about in school. Art teaches you about other cultures. It teaches you to express yourself. It teaches you to get how to get in touch with your emotions, your feelings, your aspirations, and as well, to learn to appreciate the expression of other people about their aspirations and emotions. When you make a painting or do a sculpture, you're really expressing yourself in a very unique way. There's evidence that indicates that if you want people to understand other cultures, teach them about art. And if you want people to learn how to get in touch with who they are and what they're about, get them involved in creating art, and that will allow them to do that. So, a lot of times you can say, this other thing that you're adding to the curriculum will crowd out art, and art's more important. So it's got to go. Can the panelists think of any generic negative arguments besides that old sad song about states and federalism and Clinton? Do you think are the team of these institutes that you won't think the students should pay attention to?
Critical pedagogy is one that there are a lot of weak stories that can be spun out of critical pedagogy. Anything that perpetuates the traditional method of teaching, anything like, and band-aid approaches, like approaches that says that, hey, here's a problem, let's cover it up in some way, or small ways of dealing with larger problems like cultural diversity, racism, sexism in schools, those types of cases.
So, John, is this the argument that says that if we teach about sexism in school, that then it gives us an excuse not to confront it in society?
Absolutely.
And it sort of moves it to mandate. Oh, we told them to not be sexist in school, there everything's all right.
Right.
Instead of dealing with the real causes of the problem, which are probably outside of school, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I think you understand what it does to the sexuality where you live. I teach a freshman seminar at Emory. And every year, we have one of our first readings. It's Martin Luther King's letter from the Birmingham jail. And the unit is entitled, Examining Racism in Ourselves. And almost every one of my students goes, oh, we read that already. Therefore, we are not racist. If you think you can read one article and somebody hands you a certificate that says, congratulations, you're no longer racist, that's masking that goes on at the university level. So what we're talking about is a whole different level, but it's another example of marketing.
Thank you. I'm over. Look down.
Down by Emory, that was just a few schooling counter class was just eliminated. People will learn on their own, like 90% of what they learn is in school, and it's that. And then they ran the critical pedagogy to see. And that benefits, that's a really, really bad idea. And we should talk in our lessons about what.
Another generic option is, I'm not sure if this was produced at any of the institutes or not, but it's some work that you can do on your own. It's the education spending trade-off disadvantage. It argues that when you do programs that increase funding for programs that cost money to implement, that money trades off with other funds, like maybe military spending or other programs that have already been budgeted. And if the affirmative trades off with those other programs, and it causes those programs to be cut, that's bad for various reasons. There are several stories that can be spun that way.
I just want to go back to de-schooling for a moment, and that's the notion is, remember in my old talk earlier, I said we didn't always have schools, but people learn. And the argument is that young people are curious, they want to learn. And if you leave people alone, they'll learn a lot. But school actually teaches you a number of things which stop you from learning. Like, you have to be in school to learn, somebody else has to teach you for you to learn. That you just soak up what they tell you instead of you learning through experience. And also, school teaches you to obey, to follow orders, to watch the clock, which are all things that are not about learning and discovering. And Ivan Illich, and one of Apollo Theory's buddies, is the one who writes extensively on this, that we need to do away with school. Learning and education are good. School gets in the way, is their argument. And so you could say on the negative, as your counterpoint, we eliminate school. And the affirmative has school. So you can say, now between us, we got no school, and you got school. We'll produce more learning. And it can be a interesting strategy, although provocative. Leslie, is there any kind of spending this argument that you were thinking about? Just in other programs that we catch?
You can also generally make the argument that spending is bad in educational reform, specifically things like making buildings better, building more schools, hiring more teachers, is just incredibly expensive, which it is. And I know that there's specific, potentially not specific, if you're running this with the state's counter plan, and that benefit just says, you know, again, that the states are better capable of allocating and reallocating that sort of funding.
Yes.
Considering that we do go to school, I mean, like, how can we, like, really defend our kids like that? Yeah.
You do. You don't want to go. There's a law that says you have to go. But I guess after a certain age, you don't. You're trapped in a society that won't give you a job unless you have a high school degree. Right, so you have to go to school and learn to get a job. But if we ban school, they give jobs to people who have skills or experience. So it would be a better off without school. I don't expect you to believe this. I'm just offering it as a point of view. Question.
One thing that also you said about the books of Hollywood as I'm learning in school. What was the name of that author?
Ivan Illich. One thing you might be missing is that if we don't have formal schools and buildings, we might form other ways of learning in groups. For example, homeschooling is a trend. That some folks believe in because they believe that the schools are filled with heathens and they want to educate their children in a strong religious education background, etc. Some form homeschools because they, like Tuna said, civics and humanism for obey government. They want to teach their children to be more liberal. Some want to teach their children to be more conservative. But family-based learning, those are some of the oldest schools in our history. You know, the home was its own form of school. And there are other alternatives that can happen. When you all sometimes get together in schools, what you call them clubs that have never existed before, or groups or organizations, they get around the things that you're interested in. It's like students' hip-hop 101. If you get together and form something, that's peer-based education. That you got together and made a group. Because you end a building like this with a gymnasium doesn't mean you wouldn't have physical education. It just means you would do this in a community park or a community pool in smaller groups than these big, organized, bureaucratic things where people often become numbers. So don't assume that because we're deep pools, there will cease to be opportunities for good learning. They will just come up with pipes in different ways. And that's part of the challenge of funding. What could you do? If you were in charge of your own school, your name on the textbook, what would it look like? Tuna's school would not be about a way of government. So Tuna's school might be called Tuna's School of Non-Government.
Freedom
school. See what I'm saying? Everybody might have a different way of looking at what happens afterwards. But if you read Ivan Illich, it will help give you some ideas about how that might happen.
The other thing that Illich says is that every citizen should be guaranteed access to educational objects and situations. Everyone should have access to an excellent library system. Everyone should have access to the internet. And everybody should have the access to different workplaces to go and see, do I want to be a plumber? Do I want to be an architect? Do I want to be what? And the other thing that always says is that we have to do away with certification. That means that you have to go to school and get a certain degree before you can do something. So you can do away with all those certificates the school gives you and say that you can only be hired based on your demonstrated skill. If you are a demonstrated medical skill, you can be hired as a healer. If you have good plumbing skills, you can be hired as a plumber. But no more certificates.
I just want to say one other thing about de-schooling is if you argue that there would be no jobs for teachers, an argument against that is that with de-schooling, everybody would become educators. Everybody would have some kind of skill that they could educate somebody else about. And so the accountant would not only be an accountant, they would be teaching other people how to do that job as well. The same with all other kinds of professions. You would have your jobs, per se, but you would also be an educator to other people.